Hey, listen, this is actually a gift from one of our listeners who got mad at me for not sounding good when I recorded while traveling. So
Oh yeah.
he bought me a microphone.
I love it. I love it. So the next listener needs to get you a mic stand.
It actually comes with one. I just didn't pack it.
I just spilled my coffee because that was so funny. Thank you. Damn it. It's hella locked up.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 580 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined today by Mr. Foz Mahmood, and coming from St. Augustine, Florida, Mr. Seth Miller.
Heyo.
Hola.
Howdy? I don't know. What am I doing?
How did you get to St. Augustine? Is there...
Actually, it was a good trip. We flew out of Pease,
okay,
Portsmouth International Airport, on Breeze. Flew to Orlando, MCO. Okay. McCoy Air Force Base. There's a couple different options flying out of Pease into random, mostly Florida. Raleigh actually has a service right now too, but this one, it's a couple hour drive once we get here, but the time savings not going to Boston and the cost savings not going to Boston was pretty nice. So
yeah, makes a lot of sense. Breeze was good, treated you well,
seriously nice. Which is their marketing tagline, for those who don't know. It's a nice experience. I will say we had the extra legroom economy seats on their A220. I love the A220. It's a nice plane, good window seat, all those things. We had the two together on one side, plenty of legroom and the extra legroom seats. We bought the nicer bundle, which is like their fare bundle that includes a bag and the legroom and the seat assignment, whatever, and the Wi-Fi. So fine. We were going to have carry-on bags anyways, and I figured we'd want to sit together. So by the time I was paying for that anyways, it was basically a wash. We bought these tickets a week ago, so relatively reasonably priced considering the short advance purchase. But I didn't love the economy seat. I felt weirdly upright, and like the headrest when down was in my shoulder blades, which like old United Airlines problem. Slid it up, and unlike on United, you're allowed to do that before or during critical phases of flight. Remember the old United FA?
Please put your headrest down.
Yeah, but I can't sit here with it in my shoulders. I'm going to have to try it again at some point. And it's a seat that not a lot of folks in the U.S. typically fly, I think. So I haven't flown a ton of time on it. So that was a little interesting, but overall, I mean, it's a really nice, it is, it's fine. It's easy. It was from 10 minutes from my house, so hard to complain.
I flew American. It's an interesting experience. American is an interesting carrier.
And you connected in Chicago, right?
In Chicago on the way to Syracuse, and then in DFW on the way back. Okay. Everybody complains about their F seat. I actually don't think it's that bad. I think people are like, oh, they need entertainment. I actually found the entertainment holder to be perfectly adequate because I load my own entertainment on my device.
Okay.
They had power worked. I think the seat's fairly comfortable compared to like Alaska's first class seat. Right. They're just a weird carrier with the way they operate and the way they treat people. It's very interesting.
Were you paddled on your way to the seat?
Just some of the comments that were made. I think the gate announcements in Chicago were just, I was like, what is going on? This is weird. I can't even remember what the exact comments were. It's just very bizarre. Chicago's also a dump for them. Like, I don't know how they could make that terminal in their terminals worse. Maybe leaky ceilings, and that would do it. But they're super crowded, very, very old, not clean. Yeah.
I mean, the thing about O'Hare and AA is, right, those terminals were the original terminals.
Yeah.
Right. BC was rebuilt in the 90s, which is why United's facilities are much nicer.
Yeah. Wider concourse, I think, would help them a lot at the American side. Just having more space and taller ceilings, it would feel more open automatically. So,
welcome to Airport Architecture 101.
Yeah. Don't build small hallways. Yeah. It seems like, and I was flying during spring break in Portland. I think it was spring break on the East Coast as well. and American was offering $1,600 on my Chicago to O'Hare, Chicago to Syracuse flight, $1,600 for four passengers. I was very close to taking it, but I had to go to work the next day. So
they could have gotten you to Rochester or Buffalo.
Couldn't do anything that night. They couldn't get me there until almost basically my meeting time the next day.
Bummer.
So, yeah.
Sorry, boss. Sorry, boss. Flight got canceled.
Yeah, exactly. That's what Fod said. So anyway, just an interesting experience. Also at DFW, that new terminal that they're building, I guess it's going to be F, is there's a lot that's happened to that since I flew through there last year. Like when did we go to Sydney, Foz?
August.
So since August, they've gotten actual building. A building is up. They're nice. Framed. It's like they've made a lot of progress and like they've started working on the train stop. So it's kind of impressive.
Excellent.
Yeah.
You don't feel like you're going through the imaginary terminal when you go through that area now?
No. Well, you're like, oh, that's the train stop to nowhere. Cause if I got off, I'd fall off. Yeah, it doesn't stop there yet, thankfully. But anyway, news. So I guess you guys, when did the crash at LaGuardia happened?
The night
happened after we recorded last. Yeah, it was a couple hours after we recorded last.
Yeah. So Air Canada and Air Canada CRJ, was it a 900 or 700?
900. It's a Jazz CRJ. Not Air Canada.
Not Air Canada. Sorry.
Marketed as Air Canada.
And it hit a fire truck, a LaGuardia fire truck, as it was crossing the runway. It had been cleared to cross the runway.
Yeah, and the fire truck had been cleared to cross. The aircraft had been cleared to land. The fire truck was responding to an incident on the other side of the field, and there was some miscommunication or missed circumstances.
And then I think the command, like if you listen, the control tower is telling the fire truck to stop. Who knows if that was heard, stepped on. We don't know.
Yeah.
As far as we know, the fire truck didn't have a transponder, working transponder on it.
Didn't have a transponder at all is what was reported.
Okay. Yeah.
Which makes you wonder, like, you know, LaGuardia is not new to incidents. And the Port Authority has some of the highest landing fees. That sounds like a pretty basic thing for them to miss.
And I feel like there's a decent number of pieces of equipment at the Port Authority airports that do have the transponders.
Yeah.
At the same time, it's not clear to me that that would have been enough to have, you know, skipped to miss the incident, right? Like to have avoided this crash. It was limited ATC staffing. It was, you know, the ground versus tower versus approach and all the different frequencies and things that are going on in that sort of situation. And like the controllers presumably knew where they were. There was both of the things were sort of cleared to happen, and both of those clearances being issued should require the situational awareness to know what else is around. But
yeah,
bad things happened.
Yeah, I mean, ceilings were about 800 feet, so they should have been able to see the plane once it got below that.
Think
you would hope.
I mean, being cleared, I think they, you know, especially if they were on ground frequency, they weren't hearing the cleared. They probably weren't hearing the cleared to land,
right?
Instruction. So they probably weren't looking. To be honest with you, they were like, we're cleared to cross, so we're just going to cross. And if they were in a hurry, because it was a report of fumes or some kind of odor on a United flight, and they were going to evac the plane. Yeah. What were you going to say, Foz?
Well, I have a friend who's a firefighter. And I was talking to him about this, or he used to be a firefighter. And he said, you know, the problem with the airport firefighting folks is they don't do a lot in the way of firefighting. They're not on the job every day, right? They show up, but there's not a lot of activity. So he was implying that they're not the best out there at airports because.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say like it's a lack of training. It's also, you get complacent, I think. Like you deal with a lot of. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like regular firefighters, right? On a day-to-day basis, how many firefighters are actually fighting fires? A lot of them are being used as EMTs or whatever, responding to, you know, drug overdoses, whatever it is.
But think of how much activity you have in a city versus at the airport.
True. That's a good point. I mean, I don't know that it's like lack of training. I think it is the clearance, like being cleared to land and cleared to cross, and the timing of those two things being so close.
Yeah, but like, come on, there's a level of common sense here, right? Even when you get a green light or you get a crosswalk signal, you still look both ways before you cross.
No, when I get a green light, man, I just like floor it. I don't know what you're talking about.
You guys wait for the green light?
Is that what you're supposed to do?
I'm thinking about when I'm on my bicycle, and so the traffic laws don't apply to me anyways, right?
Oh God, that's a good post on Blue Sky thing. Is that what you're referencing?
Yeah. I mean, and just generally assholery, but yeah.
I feel like, I mean, the avoidance of this, and it'll be interesting to hear what the report says about them telling the fire truck to stop.
Yeah. I mean, what's going to be interesting to me is like the plane didn't hit the front of the truck. It hit mid truck.
Yeah.
Roughly. Right. And so almost, I mean, this is a terrible thing to say, but in some ways, but like if they hadn't said stop, and if the fire engine did try to stop for some reason in the middle, would that have been worse than saying go, go, go and like speed up? I mean, not that a giant fire truck has much get up and go when you put the pedal down. But anyway, it's terrible tragedy. It's
two pilots from Jazz were killed, and a lot of passengers were hurt, including the firefighters in the truck.
Yeah.
And the flight attendant is the remarkable story.
300 feet?
Yeah.
She got thrown 300 feet in her seat, which is insane.
Yeah.
She was conscious the entire time, which you have to wonder was going through her mind as all that was playing out.
Whee! Probably not.
Yeah, I'm thinking not.
I think you would just be immediately in shock. I feel like. I don't know. It could have been a lot worse.
What I will say is, you know, jumping to conclusions a tiny bit, but ATC staffing, this is the second sort of if you go back to last January with the DC crash, it's the second situation where different frequencies, controllers overworked trying to manage multiple different things on different frequencies and it going badly. And, you know, we've had close calls in many cases and now a couple that have gone beyond close. And I feel like there's been all the talk about trying to get ATC moving forward and for a long time and getting the staffing up and this and that, and it's just not happening. And I feel like there's not enough moving in that direction. And even when the decision is made to try to do it better, it's going to take forever to get there. And it's worrisome.
Do we know what happened with the runway lights? Because there's supposed to be runway lights that tell people when to cross or when not to cross.
It relies on the transponder.
So if it had the transponder,
it would have flashed red.
Kind of wonder.
The transponder triggers the lights to change.
That's my understanding. Understanding how it works.
Interesting. I would have thought the lights were always on or off depending on what the runway usage was.
I don't think so. I mean, it would, because it's supposed to go clear. Like when you, like they're not supposed to blink red, and they were clearly blinking red when you see them in the pictures in the video. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to go to white lights when it's clear across, like, and that's kind of their steady state.
Right.
The red is the warning that like you're approaching, there's an active runway with an aircraft on approach is my understanding of how it works. Yeah. I can read it more.
Yeah. So we can do some research for to actually prepare for our recording now.
let's talk about United, cause you guys recorded without me. And I think
we covered
about the event.
We talked about most of the new news for United Interiors. The one thing we didn't talk about is something that they did not include in any of their pre-event briefings for their media day last week, which is United is adding the quote-unquote relax row.
They pulled a one more thing like Apple does?
They did. And managed to do it right and kept it secret from everyone, which is impressive.
Yeah.
They're effectively installing the equivalent of the Air New Zealand Sky Couch, cuddle class. It's been called myriad things. This is a flip up leg rest and economy that makes the entire space between your seat and the row in front of you a flat surface. And in theory, you have to buy the full row to use it. There is also in theory a surcharge to use it. They haven't released pricing that I'm aware of or details on timing, but I think they said 787s and 777s, probably the 300 ERs, will have it installed, and they expect about 200 planes to have it by early 2028, late 27, something like that. So pretty quick.
I mean, I can't imagine it's hard to install.
I think you got to swap out the seats.
Yeah, it's just like you put in a row, take out a row, put in a row, right?
Yes, I mean, as long as they're, and I don't know, it'll be interesting also if they're E plus or regular.
Yeah.
Because, right, what kind of up, you want to optimize your ability to upsell and generate that ancillary revenue, but also if you're putting it in the E plus rows, like, I'm going to take an economy plus seat and never pay for that. So, you know, are you limiting your ability to gain that incremental revenue? And also, I mean, seats can slide in and out and are relatively easy to move through the system, except, you know, if there's some wiring and whatnot with the entertainment systems, but you also got to like move them front to back or back to front. You can't just pull out a row in the middle.
I feel like they're going to do it in economy. I don't think they'll do this in E plus. It just doesn't work.
Is there enough space between the seats in economy?
No, you're going to be like, that's the beauty of it. Your kid can't roll off this bed because they're hitting the chair in front of you.
It's a bumper.
Yeah. The other thing I will say is, and you made the comment there soon about your kid. It seems like a product targeting kids or families traveling with small children. Ned Ruchel made a comment that he would love to have it for traveling with his boys. Like, I get that. But there's a decent amount of the marketing of it that's suggesting it's like for adults to sort of have space and like you can lie down. And the dimensions of the seat is 3 17-ish inch wide seats. You're talking about no more than 54 inches, which is 4'6" wide. And if you've got pitched at 34 inches in economy plus, minus the thickness of the seat, so maybe 31, 32 inches at most. It's like that square is not that big.
Yeah. And I can't imagine this is going to be super comfortable because the chairs aren't comfortable from seat to seat. It's not flat.
So the armrests are designed to go fully out of the way. They move the hinge a little bit. I'd say the armrest is fully flush. So you have a little bit of extra space there and some comfort there. But it is, yes, it's still the same cushioning. It's the same seat.
Yeah. Okay, so here's my question. Are people really willing to pay a premium for this? Like, I've looked at it on Air New Zealand. It's not cheap. It is well above what we would call a premium economy ticket to somewhere in Oceania or Asia.
And building on that theory, my question is, if it really was so valuable and desired, wouldn't someone other than Air New Zealand and I think China Southern or China Eastern maybe license it from them? And to be fair, like, Air New Zealand did have a patent on the seat design, so if you wanted to do it, you had to get their permission and pay them. But still, yeah. I it's hard for me to get behind the idea that it's super, I don't know, super in demand.
I'm kind of with you. Foz, you gonna buy this?
No. I hope to never be in the back.
Is this come with lounge access, is Foz's question?
No, I don't really care about lounge. But,
I mean, look, United is probably a little better at monetizing upgrades than Air New Zealand, right? Air New Zealand can't even figure out how to let you change the origin destination of a ticket that's not refundable.
Well, I can't wait to use plus points for this. Great. Thanks, Foz.
As if they're going to clear that plus points upgrade.
Yeah, sir, you've been denied.
You're on the wait list. You might be number 33 and there's one seed left.
Yeah, exactly. Korean. Yeah. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, they're installing a lot of them, like up to, I think, 10, like 12 sets of them on some of the planes. So that's interesting. They're making a pretty big commitment on it.
That is a lot. Yeah. That's, yeah.
But it's useful for those routes where they're weight restricted. Right, where they can't fill every seat anyways.
So now you put it on L.A. Singapore or Newark Joburg, and you could be like, yeah, we didn't fill those seats because no one paid for it, and it's great because we're underweight.
Yeah, I mean, to follow this point, though, if you're not selling the seat anyways, it's like letting people bid for the empty seat next to them that was going to be empty anyways kind of thing.
Yeah. Korean had a huge Boeing order.
103 planes for delivery from starting later this year through 2039. So it's a big window. But 20 777X, 25 787 10s, 50 737 MAX 10s, and then 8 freighters. Which, yeah, does add up. Okay.
The MAX 10s is interesting to me.
It's a lot, yeah. They already have the MAX, right? MAX 8?
I think they have MAX 8s, yeah.
Yeah, well, no one has the 10.
But I don't think, I don't think they have any MAX 9s is where I was going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think they operate in markets where capacity is a much bigger issue than range. And so, you know, I would assume the MAX 10s will fly secondary cities in Japan and all over China. And then, right, the MAX, or not the MAX 10s, the 787 10s are higher capacity, but they can run those to all of the West Coast and all of Southeast Asia. I would assume, I have to double check the range, but I think that they could probably make most of those runs. And then the 777Xs, they can use for the long haul stuff, the East Coast or Europe or, you know, further into, you know, Middle East kind of stuff.
I think it's good for them. It's a lot of planes.
It's through 2039.
Yeah, I guess they have to replace, I mean, they've got some aging fleet. They've got the Asiana planes that are probably, especially like the A380s, that they're probably not going to keep. So,
right. Well, I mean, both of them, they operate 380s on both sides, but you'd think that they need to have a plan for retiring those. So the 777X helps there.
Yeah.
They got a bunch of 330s,
mm-hmm.
Which are, half of them are 25 years old and half of them are 20 years old or 15 years old, 10 years old, something like that. Yeah. Sorry, doing math in my head. Not smart. They've got some 99 to 2003 deliveries and then some from 2014 to 2015. So like the earlier batch of those are going to need to be replaced. And I think this sure looks like 787s are the replacement.
Yep.
Yeah.
Maybe they're hedging their bets with the 777-9s to see if they actually get them. And then maybe they'll swap those to 787-10s or 787-9s. Yeah. I don't know.
I will say they do have a nice chunk of 321 Neos. They got 19 of those in service right now. So the MAX 10 does diversify that a bit, but builds on the MAX 8 order.
Well, and Asiana has a bunch of 321 Classics.
Yeah, those are going to need to get replaced one way or another.
Yeah.
Tell me about the ITA Lufthansa Lifetime rug pull. What's going
on? Oh, this is fun. So Italy, man. Italian loyalty programs get shut down every 2 years or so. And it's a natural, it's just the way Italy works. And so the Mille Miglia program used to like shut down and restart. And when they do it, it would restart. And if you had any activity in the last year, your points rolled over and your new account stayed. It's like, for most people, it was a non-event. But I still remember always getting the emails of like, your account is dying. Congratulations. Here's your new account. And so that was no big deal, but this time around they're killing it and it's not Mille Miglia anymore. It's whatever ITA's program is called, but they're killing it because it's become part of Lufthansa Miles and More, except that it turns out they're not honoring lifetime status.
Oh, man.
So we got a good friend who is a long, long, long term Alitalia, now ITA flyer, and who is like, possibly was like top 10 of most miles ever flown with them as a commercial passenger kind of thing. And was like, yeah, I no longer have status. That's like, and then maybe maybe still has a status from, you know, month to month or year to year, but like losing the lifetime status there is a pretty big smack in the face.
It's hard to believe that they would do that. A little bit. I think Lufthansa would be fairly like stick to the rules. Like, this person has lifetime status, we're going to keep it. Like that just strikes me as their modus operandi.
They have lifetime status in a program that doesn't exist, though.
Yeah, exactly.
To use your point, Stephen, though, I think the vast majority of mergers, and especially when it's not a distressed airline merger, right? This was not buying them out of bankruptcy or anything like that. This was a eyes wide open sort of thing. The vast majority of the time, those sorts of bits are honored. And even out of distress, half the time they're honored. So seeing it not honored here is very interesting and surprising and slightly relevant to our next conversation.
Yeah, and that is the JetBlue merger rumors.
Yes. Middle of last week, Semaphore posted a story claiming that JetBlue has hired financial advisors to help them negotiate potential merger partnerships. Wow. Foz just yawned at that one, so Foz doesn't care.
I want to hear y'all's thoughts. I have thoughts, but I want to wait and let you guys give your thoughts on this.
Well, they listed three contenders, right?
Yes. They listed Alaska Airlines, Southwest Airlines, and United Airlines.
I mean, we know United wants the JFK assets. I don't know if they
and probably and vaguely Fort Lauderdale, although they still think Fort Lauderdale's not big enough.
Vaguely. But I mean, Fort Lauderdale they could also build up if they really wanted to.
They wouldn't have gate. They don't have enough gate access. There's not enough empty gates for them to do it themselves.
Since when has that ever stopped an airline?
Well, United sometimes has been rational about some growth decisions lately. But anyway.
But JFK is slot restricted, so that's the real asset.
Yeah.
Does it make sense? Possibly. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Alaska rumor was probably the most interesting to me.
I think, yeah, I mean, it's certainly from a sort of combining complementary route networks makes a ton of sense. Would the DOJ let United take that large a stake at JFK given their position at Newark also?
I don't know. In this administrative climate? Yes.
Even in this administration, I'm not entirely convinced.
Yeah. I'm going to throw my two cents in here. I think maybe this is just fluff and it pushed up JetBlue's stock price, which
briefly
at this point,
I think it didn't hold.
Like, but it like, there's no way they would complete the merger within this administration's time.
Yeah. Within 3 years.
I don't think they have 2 years,
2.5 years left.
So I don't think they could do it.
It depends on JetBlue's real financial position.
Yeah.
I think I'm
looking at the stock. It was trading at, you know, 415, 418 on the 23rd. It opened on the 24th. It spiked on the 24th. It spiked at noon on the 25th when the story came out up to almost $5. And by Friday was back down to 420 again. So like no one believes. So it seems like no one really believes that this is going to go through.
Exactly. Someone made money during that time, but it wasn't me. I feel like the real assets, like Foz mentioned, is the airports, and the fact that they have a bunch of planes that they own outright, and those are the assets. And if anyone wanted them, that's the thing that they would go for, and that's it, really.
But the planes they own, are they the new ones or are they the old ones?
It's a mix.
Okay, how many do they actually own outright?
It's a significant number, I think. Like there's a bunch of unencumbered,
yeah.
Okay. Books. So I feel like that's the story here is that, like, which airline wants those things? United probably wants JFK. I would argue Alaska would want JFK too.
Sure.
I think Alaska would be the least friction from regulatory pressures.
Yeah. It's just the problem of they're still trying to digest the Hawaiian merger and see if that's actually going to work or not.
Yeah. That's going so well. It's going so well.
I mean, but, you know, take a couple of those 787s that Hawaiian has on order and move them. They were going to move them all to Seattle, and put a few in JFK in Boston.
And run European flights. I don't know. Like, that's your real chance at operating. That's the other thing I'll say. Like, I talked about the trip I took. Alaska and Americans partnership is a weird bird. Like, it's not a real partnership. They don't sell a lot of the routes. The ones they do sell are extremely expensive. And it doesn't really feel like an integrated operation. So to me, it's like kind of worthless. I'd rather I'm just going to pick one. I'm going to book the flights on American, or I'm going to book the flights on Alaska, and whichever one works. So,
yeah.
All that said, I don't see Southwest buying JetBlue at this
point. No.
I don't see them caring about the assets of JetBlue.
No, the other interesting angle with Alaska is it gives American a back door
into more gates at JFK.
No, into JetBlue Northeast Alliance.
Oh, gotcha. Do you think American would want them?
The airline? No. American can't even figure out if they want to put IFE on the planes or not.
We're going to talk about that later.
Foz has decided it's time to segue to our next topic.
Yes. All right. Tell me about American in-flight entertainment, Foz.
They're apparently contemplating putting IFE back on the narrow bodies. They might move beyond being America West.
To be fair, I mean, and they also rumored talk about possibly switching to Leo for satellite, either Amazon or Starlink. So that's not entirely new. I forget the name of the CEO now, but he said that like
Isom.
Yeah, I said that 5 or 6 months ago too. So, you know, it's a little bit of, we're always considering new things, sort of lip service, but it may be real.
I think the Wi-Fi is probably it's a good move. It's free if you have an AA account on their flights, which I like.
Only on all the planes except the old Panasonic equipped long haul.
So yeah, the wide bodies.
Some of the wide bodies.
Yeah,
there's some of the 787s have Viasat already, Foss, and are
okay.
The newer ones.
I will say it was not fast. Like it was at times barely usable, but it's free. So I guess if it doesn't suck and it's free, it's great. If it sucks and it's free, you can't complain.
So I guess this is an interesting question that I had, and Seth might be able to chime in on this. With so many carriers jumping to Starlink in particular, moving away from what I would call second generation Wi-Fi,
mm-hmm.
What's going to happen with all the capacity that companies like Viasat have rolled out?
An excellent question. Viasat would tell you they still have plenty of capacity and plenty of demand and thousands of planes equipped. So, you know, no big deal. Admittedly, that demand is geographic and the satellites are in specific places. So that can be a challenge. But like the new satellites going up right now, Viasat also wants to get back into fixed location services, which is the home stuff. They basically, because the first Viasat 3 satellite broke, they've been shedding customers off their terrestrial service at home subscribers and hope to now gain them back. Now, how they hope to win them back when Starlink has such an established presence and the lower latency is an interesting challenge, and same challenge on airplanes, but you know, now on the ground in a much lower margin business where the cost to switch is not taking a plane out of service for a couple of days and you know, $500,000 in hardware or $1 million in hardware. So it's an excellent question. They obviously think it's going to be just fine and they're building more satellites and all those things, but I wonder the same thing. I wonder where that glut of capacity is going to end up going.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, in regards to the, I know we're completely off base here, but in regards to the housing market, the residential market, Starlink's $40 a month in most of the country and free hardware.
Is it?
Yes.
I didn't realize it was that cheap.
Yeah, I just ordered one.
Yeah, they if we're going to keep going down this random sidetrack, a bunch of general aviation people were getting Starlink minis and putting them in the window of their props.
And they got cease and desist, right?
Well, so then there was Starlink basically changed the service plan. It's like, yeah, if you're moving more than 100 miles an hour, you're going to pay a little extra and actively mm-hmm. using it. And that was supposed to get to these folks and it was fine for a while. And now they've changed it again. And there's like a 300 mile an hour limit. And they went from like 100 gigs included to 20 gigs included and they made it way more expensive for a lot of these people and pissed a lot of people off. So interesting changes there. But yes, and there is also a question of will the congestion challenges, especially around hubs, also affect Starlink? Because, you know, there's 10,000 satellites in orbit, but there's limits on the amount of signal strength that can be pushed to any one place, especially in the United States. And they have to share the spectrum that they have in the Ku band in the United States. So there's even more significant limits. And so, you know, standing question how is this going to scale up? And it's been a question for every internet provider on airplanes everywhere in the world, every time. So far, it's looking okay. And, you know, United has all of its regionals now basically installed, or a couple hundred regionals installed, and it hasn't overwhelmed a hub yet, but we'll see.
I'm apparently in a very popular area for Starlink because it's like, due to demand in your area, you get a surcharge. I didn't know there was like surge pricing.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's, there was a period where they wouldn't let new people sign up in areas like that. So
now I get to pay for the privilege.
Yeah. they could have just said no. That would
I know. That would have been okay. I would have taken that, right? First prize, one slap in the face. Second prize, two slaps in the face.
Weak.
So, yeah.
One other random AA thing I want to talk about before we wrap up here. I don't know if you guys got it. I got an email offering me bonus points to sign up for enabling in-app notifications.
I got it in the app and via email.
Oh, well, that was the app.
Because I was on a trip and it was like popped up. It's like, do you want in-app notifications? Get some bonus miles. I'm like, no, I'm good. Thank you.
I used to turn it on and turn it off.
I was trying to read the fine print to see how long you had to leave it on for and what it would take to get the credit. And I honestly couldn't be bothered to care. It's like 300 points and that's just not going to worry about it. But
Dick,
yeah.
Do you really need America? I mean, it does stink of, you put in desperation. I think it stinks more of like cheap. Like it's just like, we don't really know how to address our customer base. So here, maybe they'll sign up for some notifications.
Right. It's just like their marketing isn't working. And this is a way that they're desperate to try to get, you know, establish that connection. And one of the ways I see it is like, if you go back nearly 30 years now, 25 years, remember, you know, 500 bonus points for booking online.
Yeah.
Right. It was to get you off of the phone system and get you away from third party OTAs or travel agents. And it cost them a little bit of money, but it built the habits that they wanted and, you know, ultimately was very fiscally successful for them. But they were basically buying behavior. And this is buying behavior, but like on the one hand, they're paying very little for the behavior that they want. And then on top of that, like what level of push notifications are they planning to start running that this is going to have a value add to them? And I just, like I'm imagining like daily credit card offers coming through and CFO's is losing his shit here because
this is a one-time offer. When you leave this location, this offer will expire.
Right. It's things like that. And like, I get it. And you know,
that's the best part of their in-flight announcement for the credit card is like, this offer expires when you leave the plane, but they're like, but if you take a flyer and you give it to your friends, they get the same offer. Like, so it doesn't really expire when you get off the plane. Like, who wrote this script?
Your definition of expire does not seem to be real.
You keep using that word. I think it means what you think it means. Yeah, I don't love it, man. I don't love it.
But, I mean, look, American is not behaving like a low-cost carrier. That's the fundamental problem with American.
I texted Foz, and I said, American, this feels like slightly upscale Spirit. That's what it felt like flying them.
It's probably about right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Part of me is like, and so what? Like, is that a bad thing? Like,
clearly, I think it is because I don't think that's what American wants to be.
Fair.
Does American even know what it wants to be? Let's be real.
Like they are talking about both ends of the spectrum, right? On one side, they want to be a premium carrier, and you see that in their new 7/8s. Then on the other side, they want to be a discount carrier, and you see the way they price and they behave.
Yeah. You were going to say something.
Yeah. No, I mean, is it a customer service, like, experience problem? Is it a, like, comfort problem? What are the things that make it premium? And I know we talk about this a lot. We talked about this with United and, you know, last week and all the stuff that they're doing to try to become more premium, quote unquote, and all this bits. And like, it's hard. And I don't know that I know the answer either, but like, and I do get what you're saying of like certain airlines do have a different sort of more premium feel to them, but I don't know what the premium is. And I don't know what it nets them revenue wise. And you got to, like, is it worth the expense? And United and Delta sure as hell seem to think so, but is it?
But I'll give you an example of what's premium, right? And this is where American shines and United sucks balls. Premium check-in, business class, first class, AA will not put a kiosk at that desk. You actually get to talk to a human.
I like that.
Yeah. United, you can't even, like, you have to jump through hoops to talk to a human.
Yeah. And if you want to, if you want the automated version, United has made, you know, United at least also has it in the app. You can do 90% of what you need there. It's almost a weird situation. Like, yeah, we do have the digital version of it, but if people want a human, let them have a human.
Yeah, I think there's like this push. There's this push to use technology to solve problems, and I think American kind of stinks at that.
But not for lack of trying.
Yeah, I think.
But this is why they're paying people to use the app now.
But aside from United, who really excels at the technology?
I think that was where I was going. That's where I was going. Is I think they all kind of suck at it, and I think the problem is they think they're good at it, and they've replaced service with the idea that you can go to the app, and the reality is you can't, or it doesn't work the way you think it does, and so the experience of going through the app is bad. Now, United is an exception to this because most things you could do through the app, not great all the time, but
United, now you can do less things than you could 2 or 3 years ago,
because they didn't like that people were abusing it.
Well, but not even that. They've broken things that used to work, right? Because True. They've been so hyper-focused on making it pretty and the aesthetic of it versus the functionality of it.
Totally agree.
And because of that, the functionality keeps deteriorating.
Yeah, I will say American added the delay notification reasons thing like United has to the app.
Really? My flight was delayed and we didn't get any notification.
Did you sign up for push yet?
No.
That could be why.
But it's not in the app. Like, it doesn't tell you in the app, like, why you're delayed. It's like, half the time, it didn't even tell me we were boarding or anything. It was just like, oh, you know, your flight's in 30 minutes. I'm like, great. Thanks for telling me. I know that.
So how do you feel about them hiding the flight status in the app on the American side?
It's bizarre. Like, why would you?
What do you mean?
It's not, there's no flight status button when you go in the app. You have to go under trips.
Yes.
To even find the flight status option.
Yeah, no, that's like 90% of the reason people use. Okay, yeah. Missing the plot.
Now, to be fair, your flights are still on the main screen. But if you want to like start doing like when's the next flight? Like I'm going to Chicago. When's the next flight? You have to go into trips. Then you have to go. It's an extra step to get there, and it's not intuitive.
And I'm opening the app now to see this, and I will say the in-app notification asking you to turn on notifications doesn't promise you the 300 bonus points. So
lovely. So one other thing. I want to talk about Chicago O'Hare real quick.
Yeah.
The number of people going through O'Hare is insane. Like it's wall-to-wall people. Almost the entire time I was there, I had a 3-hour layover, and it was just people the entire time, just nonstop. And because United has now taking over the gates at the, what is that, E and F? Do they have E and F and G?
The EF and a few gates in G.
They have to, the TSA people that work the exits there, because you can exit from the F side, like there's an exit out, and you can go downstairs to baggage claim. That's not connected to United's baggage claim area. So the TSA is having to direct people to go over to the other side because their bags are being delivered to the other side of the airport. And it's not an easy walk. Like if you get down there, you have to go outside or you have to go down to the tunnels to cross over and then come back up to baggage claim at the correct terminal.
Or take the train.
I don't think you have to take the train because it's really walkable. Like I wouldn't, taking the train would probably be out of the way, but it's if you don't know where you're going, like it points you to baggage claim, which is at the exit, but then it's not really the baggage claim.
Not your baggage claim. Yeah.
So I'd say it's problematic for United.
Question is, who's using the baggage claim in Terminal 2 then?
I think it's American, because they have gates at G.
No, but G's technically part of Terminal 3.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like JetBlue and Spirit and everybody. Well, Spirit's done, but like JetBlue and Spirit and all the other random airlines.
But isn't Spirit like, maybe, but I mean, they're all in G, right?
I think they were, I guess Spirit was those 4G gates that they gave up and went back to common use, which I think Alaska? There was a theory that they were going to move to, maybe that Spirit might move out to the M gates because Southwest is pulling out.
Mm. Is it Alaska that's doing it? Because they have gates there, right?
No, the Alaska's in G. Yeah. The only people in D&E are United at this point, and Air Canada. So I bet you Air Canada has one baggage claim.
Sweet.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
All right. So let's wrap it up. We're going to thank some patrons. I don't know. How do you want to say this? Bobby J, Bert J, Count Chocula. Great name. Johnny K, Sheil A. Thank you for supporting the show. We appreciate it. If you're not a Patreon subscriber, you can sign up for the bonus topics because we're going to talk about Porter, a bunch of Porter news, and a bunch of things coming from the Iran fallout and the war that's going on there. So stick around for that. If you're not a Patreon subscriber, thanks for listening. And happy travels.
Take care.
See you later.